Hi there, this is Angela Middleton and welcome to my podcast, I Want to BA, where I interview high flyers from all industries to find out their journey, how they came to do what they do, what it's like to do their job, and then their advice for listeners wanting to follow in their footsteps. In this series, we cover everything from traditional careers such as accountancy through to the less traditional careers and future industries such as digital marketing and digital publishing. Today we have the absolute honour of having the Right Honourable Robert Halfen MP in the studio to talk to us about his role not only as an MP but also as a former minister and also currently the chair of the Education Select Committee, meaning that his remit is overseeing education for everybody ranging from early years childcare right the way through to post-university upskilling in the workplace and everything in between. He was somebody who worked unrelentingly on apprenticeships over the last few years, and I do believe that the work that he's done in that area has changed the kudos of being an apprentice really across the board in the UK, so that now parents, students and schools see it as a uniquely viable alternative to university. So Robert, thank you so much for joining us today. And if we can start by just hearing a bit about where you were brought up in your childhood and your school life.
Sure, well, it's good to be here, Angela. I love your company, so you do incredible work with young people. So I was really pleased to do this podcast today.
But thank you.
Now, I was brought up in North London. My father ran a wholesale fruit and veg business. He was an immigrant here from Libya. He was Italian and Jewish, and the family had to leave Libya because Gaddafi, when he took over, didn't much like Italians, and he certainly didn't like Jews. So my father came here when he was very young, met my mother, and the rest is history, as they say.
And you actually got involved in your dad's company at a very early age. He had you doing some sort of part-time work for him, didn't he?
Yeah, I used to have to work there. Well, I didn't have to, but I wanted to work there in the summer holidays, £50 a week. I had to walk quite far, take quite a few buses and trains to get there, because my father wouldn't let me go with him in the car, because he said, no other employee is going with me in the car. Why should you? And he was pretty strict. I had to be there on time. In fact, I got wages docked one time for being late. But I felt very proud at the end of the week, and I got my £50 in a beautiful little white envelope, and it was an incredible feeling walking down the road to my house. You really didn't want to spend it, because I had earned that money and I put it in my top pocket. And so I felt very, very happy.
Yeah. There's nothing like your first wage packet, is there?
It's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
Incredible feeling.
And I think people even feel that even now. It sort of gets transferred into their bank account. It's still that same feeling of earning your own money. And we'll talk a bit more about that. You were brought up in North London. So tell us a bit about school. How was school for you?
Well, my father was determined. He was an immigrant here, as I mentioned. And he was determined to send us to private school. I went to two different schools, Arnold House and then Highgate. It was tough. I was good at some subjects, not great at others. I had a lot of operations on my legs as a child, so I missed periods of schooling. He was, again, my father was very determined and proud, and wanted to say that his sons, because I had two brothers, went to these schools.
And having to sort of miss bits of school and things like that, some of our listeners may be also encountering that. Did that impact your sort of academic achievements at all?
I don't think it did. I missed a lot of school, but I was kind of loved reading. So I read.
Yeah.
Read newspapers, read books from a very, very young age, and I know that helped me later on. I was just lucky that I was built with a lot of stamina, a lot of determination, because when I was initially growing up and I couldn't walk, the doctors told my father that I would not be able to have a proper life, and I had to go to a special school. My father didn't believe that. He got me to see this incredible professor, Great Ormond Street Hospital, who changed my life, understood what the problem was. It was called spastic diplegia. And here I am now as an MP, Member of Parliament.
Amazing. And you knew what you wanted to do at a very early age, actually. You had epiphany at the age of about 10, didn't you?
I was a very strange child, yeah. So we had an MP come to my school saying the House of Commons had 1,000 rooms. I didn't believe it. I demanded to see the House of Commons. I went on a tour, and literally from the age of 10, I decided I would be a Member of Parliament. I kept going back there all through my life to watch debates, see what was going on, and I started following politics. I realised that actually I was a huge admirer of Maggie Thatcher at the time, and came to agree with everything, almost everything she was saying, and felt so inspired. This unbelievably strong woman could achieve so much in an age which was very different to now, where it was much harder for a woman to get on in top jobs than it is now.
And you actually joined the Young Conservatives, didn't you, at an early age as well?
I did, at 14, and started leafleting and going to meetings. It was great.
And so that's really, I imagine, where you got introduced to the concept of campaigning and sort of influencing.
Yeah, I loved campaigning, and I remember leafleting. I stood for local council in unwinnable areas, so they weren't strong Conservative areas, when I was quite young as well. And I remember being outside polling stations as thing you do when there are election days called telling, where you record the votes of people, not the how they're voting, but the numbers on their polling card. In fact, I still do it to this day. So I have been doing that since I've been 14 years old at almost every local council election, every general election, at polling stations.
Yeah, it's amazing. We see you on TV actually doing that as well. Yeah, you're well known for that. Although you say that you weren't sort of particularly academic, you did do A levels, didn't you?
Yeah, so I was good at history, English. I loved history, English literature, and those more art subjects. And I did A-levels history and English and politics because I knew I wanted to be an MP, and I wanted to go to university to study politics. And A-levels actually was the first time I started enjoying school. It was very tough. I mean, so many exam papers I had to do, and I did a scholarship level, which was above A-level as well, in history and politics. But I loved it because I was doing essays, reading things I really enjoyed doing for the first time.
And it's probably an example of where, you know, when you're doing something and you have a reason for doing it at the other end, so you had a very clear vision of what it was you wanted to do, you're sort of compelled to work hard. And
because I didn't work as hard previously because I didn't enjoy it. But the A-levels, I used to get home, have a break, have a cup of tea, have my supper, as it was then called, and then I would work throughout the night.
And you saw it as a means to
I'd be taking Pro Plus, which you mustn't. I'm not advertising Pro Plus, but just to keep myself awake, so I could do all these essays.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And so did you ever consider not going to university, or was this just a natural next step because of you wanted to achieve?
Had I known, if there had been like the apprenticeship schemes that there are today, where you can work in Parliament, where you can work as a journalist apprentice, where you could work in your company as an apprentice, perhaps I would have loved to have done that. But it wasn't really an option. And also my father was desperate to send us to university because it's something very proud. I remember being in the local paper just because I'd been in university. That doesn't happen today because so many more people go, and it was an incredible thing when I did my A-levels to think, wow, I'm going to Exeter University.
Yeah, fabulous. So you went to Exeter, and you were there for a number of years because you did a master's as well, didn't you?
I did 3 years of politics. I was very involved in student politics as well. I became chairman of my local student conservatives and the regional student conservatives of Western Areas, it was then called, and I did a 3-year politics degree and loved it so much I stayed on to do Russian and Eastern European politics for another 18 months.
And then after that you did a variety of different jobs, surprisingly, in sales and telesales, which I didn't know, so tell us a bit about those.
Well, funny enough, I had a year off before I went to university, and I worked as a volunteer in a hospital in Israel for geriatrics for that time. But I also spent quite a bit of time trying to earn money selling double glazing, would you believe it, on the phones. And I can even remember the line, we will pay you towards the cost of having your windows replaced. That was the opening line, if we feature your house in the magazine. And I sold debt collecting services on the telephone again, and I used a line, we use ballet shoes, not hobnail boots.
So you were quite resourceful with your selling as well. And a lot of people are really anti-sales. They're frightened of it, first of all. They're frightened of the phone. People just don't like to think of themselves as selling. And yet, you know, what we always see is that it stands you in such good stead for future careers. So what would you say about, you know, sales? And would you recommend it as a sort of a stepping stone?
Well, what I'd say to people is we sell ourselves every day. every single day in what we're doing when we go for interviews. That's sales. We're selling ourselves to the company. And it's an incredibly tough job. And when I came out of university, I sold hotel memberships for quite a while. And you develop a skin of a rhinoceros because you get a lot of rejections. Sometimes people are very rude to you on the phone. And you have to be very resourceful and think outside the box. You develop a kind of team thing because you're doing it with a whole load of other people as well. You develop confidence because you talk to anyone, whether it is a duke or a dustman on the phone, and it gives you incredible amount of skills. So it's a really good job to go and do, but it is tough. There's no doubt about it.
And it can be lucrative as well, because very often these jobs, they have quite a low basic salary, but you can get great commission. So whilst this was going on, you were still obviously pursuing your dream of becoming an MP, and so you started that just working with another MP one day a week, didn't you?
Yes, so I was writing to MPs. One MP gave me a job for one day a week, and I arrived on the first day. He put me in a tower, literally called St Stephen's Tower in the House of Commons. You had to go up some stairs, very top of the tower. There was a room there, and he left me to it. I had one book, Campaign Guide. I sound really old, but I'm not that old, but it was pre-computers, yeah. Really, and I was just expected to get on with it, and I didn't see him for the rest of the day.
I couldn't believe you were there in this building. With 1,000 rooms.
And even though I didn't see the MP that much, it was one day a week, it was like I had won the lottery.
Yeah. And so you were sort of carrying out a variety of tasks for him, you were saying, research,
writing letters. It was completely varied, but then I got jobs with other MPs who heard about me, or I went to see them, and I started. In fact, I had a whole collection of MPs that I ended up working for, and even a member of the House of Lords as well. And I did this all off my own back without any connections. You know, I didn't have family who went to the poshest schools. I didn't have any political connections, but I off my own back. So it shows what you can do.
Mm. And so you were only about 23 at this point, and yet you set up your own sort of little entrepreneurial organisation, really, of sort of services for different MPs.
That's right. And I, at one time, because space at the House of Commons was very limited, there weren't proper offices at that time. It's changed a little. I saw an advert for an office in Loot newspaper, which is an old newspaper. I think it's all online nowadays. And I found an office which was run by these Christian Scientists. I think they were called Christian Scientists. And they had it for a couple of days a week, and they had me, and I was able to be there for about 3.5 days a week, and it was tiny money, £40 a week, and I had an Amstrad word processor fold-up thing, which was very amazing at the time, and I pager. Pre-mobile phone, a pager when people...
So you're very high-tech.
I always love mobile tech. I'm a mobile tech fanatic, as my office knows, who are watching this interview. And then I ran the office from there.
Yeah, definitely. And then after that, you moved into lobbying. So tell us a bit about that.
So I was approached by a political consultancy. It doesn't exist anymore, but they asked me to come for an interview just out of the blue as their head of research. And I did it, so the money was much better than from what I was earning. And I did that for a few years and then moved to another public affairs consultancy for a couple of years before I decided to go and work for the Conservative Party.
And on that point, it's a good example of where if you are good at what you do and you let people know what you're doing, you do get approached.
That was the amazing thing. Apart from when I initially got the jobs with MPs, every single other job I later got in my life, except of course being elected as MP, was people coming to me, because I was relentless with networking. I went to so many different political events all the time. I got to meet other MPs who knew what I was doing, and other public affairs companies that help businesses navigate through the world of politics.
Yeah, it's so important to let people know what you're doing, what your interests are and what your goals are, and to share that. And obviously we've got social media to do that now, so people are sort of better positioned, really. But you can't be the world's best kept secret, because people won't seek you out if they don't know about you.
Well, I always liken social media to a dating agency. You can click on the mouse and look for the person you're looking for, but unless you go and meet that person, you're still at home and you're computer. So what you really need to, social media is great and it's really good for linking up and seeing what's going on, but there's nothing better than networking. You have to meet people, you have to be a people person to get on, and it doesn't matter what job you're doing.
Absolutely. So then you decided that you were now going to go all in on the dream of becoming an MP. And so tell us about that.
Well, I decided that from the age of 10, I would be one. And then in 1999, I went to an interview for the Conservative Party. It took place over about 2.5 days, called the Candidates Weekend, where you do exams, written tests, interviews to be decided whether or not you're fit to be an MP. And I passed that, got on the candidates list, and then I went for interviews at a couple of places in 1999, two or three constituencies, and I was finally selected in Harlow in November 1999. And it's really tough. You have to do it. It's a bit like Dragon's Den, because you have to appear before your local party. Lots of other people want to be the candidate or the MP for that area. The party interview you, and you then get whittled down, and you go through various rounds as well. But it was amazing. I was selected in November 1999 as the parliamentary candidate for Harlow, and then stood for the first time in 2001.
So you were very successful. You actually were appointed in this seat, and then what happened?
Well, I got I cut the Labour majority down from 11,000 odd to 5,000 in the 2001 election, and then I decided to stand again. And in 2005, can you believe it, I lost by 68,000 voters, remember? So I lost by literally 97 votes.
Oh my goodness.
There were three
from 68,000?
From 68,000 voters. We had three recounts. So normally they start on Thursday night, Friday morning after general elections. Mine went on till Saturday morning. And so by Saturday lunchtime, there's this fantastic photo of me slumped in a chair. That's an awful photo, I should say. I look bloated and knackered and
you must
miserable.
Be so devastated.
So miserable. But you think you want something since 10 years old, and then you're 97 votes away from it, having done year after year
and you've got to wait for another 4 years for another chance.
Exactly,
yeah.
Or five even.
Well, you really have to find your sort of inner drive and
Well, I love swimming, so I went swimming. I'm actually quite a good swimmer. And I decided that I would just fight it again. And I wanted to stay in Harlow because, although I wasn't brought up there, I love it. Mm. I live there. I just have one home in Harlow, and it's a very special place. So I decided I would stand again, and I got elected in 2010.
Congratulations. And then after 2010, you stood again in 2015 and was very successful in increasing your majority even more. And in addition to that, which is obviously a huge amount of work, many MPs would really not have time to do anything else, but you've found the time and have always found the time to be very, very active outside of just your constituency as well. And you've been very active in Parliament, starting off with a number of speeches. Your first speech was about apprenticeships, I believe.
It was. I began to realise that when I was a parliamentary candidate, before I was elected, that apprenticeships were an unbelievable route for young people to climb the ladder of opportunity, especially those from disadvantaged backgrounds. So I got elected in 2010, and I thought, practice what I preach. So I did my first ever speech on apprenticeships, and then I started a parliamentary apprentice scheme, and it had never happened before. And I employed a full-time parliamentary apprentice in my office.
Yeah, you were the first MP to actually take an apprentice on.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is now a lot of MPs say that they were the first, but I'm actually delighted with that because it shows that it's been a success.
Completely, yeah. And then after that, David Cameron actually appointed you to the Cabinet too.
So 2015 came along, then the general election, and then after the general election, David Cameron and George Osborne asked me to be deputy chairman of the Conservative Party, and I was put in the cabinet for a year, and that was one of the most incredible experiences of my life.
Amazing.
It'll be something I'll remember when I'm 95. It was a huge privilege to be in the cabinet.
And then you were appointed Minister of Skills.
And then Theresa May became Prime Minister. She appointed me Minister of State for Skills and Apprenticeships, which again is a job that I love doing because I could actually put into practice some of the things that I believed in.
After that, after doing an amazing job in that role, you then went on to stand for your current position. Tell us about that.
So I did the apprenticeship role till just after the 2017 election. And then what happened, I was not any longer any minister, but I still wanted a role in education. And you have in Parliament these very important committees. They're called select committees, which scrutinise the work of government. They act as powerhouse of ideas. They're called government ministers to be accountable for the policies. But you have to stand for election for the chair. And it's not just asking people from my own party to vote for me. You have to go around and get every member from every different party and try and persuade them to vote for you. So you have to persuade Labour members who may not agree with Conservatives, but still to vote for you as chair. That's tough. But I was able to beat five other candidates literally by standing outside the House of Commons every day for a week handing out leaflets.
And I have to say, this was where you were able to pull on all of those skills that you picked up at that very early age, doing your sows, you know, having that resourcefulness, resilience, and not being frightened of no's, basically. So to get all this done, obviously you have very, very long days. So let's talk a little bit about a typical day for you. I know it's not typical, but you describe your day.
Well, it's a long day. So I wake up at 6 a.m. I've sometimes have what's called the ACC diet, which is an anodyne coffee and sometimes cigar in the morning. I know it's terrible and unhealthy, but I drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah.
Or Diet Coke.
I share that with you. Not the Coke, but the coffee.
I drink a lot of Diet Cokes in the morning as well. And I get up, I quickly go through the papers as quickly as I can on my tablet. I used to have the real papers, but now I do it all on my Android Samsung tablet. And then I get in for 8 o'clock-ish. Usually have meetings. Sometimes I have my committee. If I've got my select committee, I get there an hour early, an hour and a half early, just so I can prepare again, although I've learnt all the stuff beforehand. It's a bit like sometimes like doing an exam or appearing before a court. So just to make sure I remember all the questions and the briefings. I have meetings wall to wall, or sometimes in the chamber doing speeches on education or apprenticeships or cutting the cost of living. I then have more meetings, and then we vote often in the evening. So Monday night, we usually vote at 10 p.m. It's a way of life. It's like you go home after a day and I turn on the news or listen to the news on the radio, put on talk radio, LBC or whatever it might be.
Well, it's what you love, isn't it? It's what you're good at and it's what you love. And when you can get that combination in your career, then I guess, you know, I know it's a cliche, but it is true. It doesn't feel like work because you're doing what you love. What would you say, though, are some of the challenges of the role?
Well, it's an amazing job, but it is tough. It's relentless, so it doesn't let up. You get hundreds, literally, of emails every day. Mm. Not nowadays, it's not just emails, it's DMs on Twitter, it's Facebook messages. Journalists have your WhatsApp, so they then text you on WhatsApp. So it's hard to manage it all. And also now, when I first started in politics, you would have vigorous debates, pretty fierce debates about NHS, about education, whatever it might be. And now politics has become incredibly toxic. Mm. So there's a very, can be a nasty atmosphere out there. So whilst I love social media and it is amazing, it can be a sewer. Mm. And people feel free to be abusive, to be racist, to be insulting, and hide behind their keyboards a very cowardice way.
So for all of that, obviously you can make this huge, amazing impact in this role, and I'm sure that there are people now listening who would love to follow in your footsteps but maybe are quite daunted about how to go about it. So how would you suggest that people that are interested, where would they start? How could they go
about
it?
Well, if you love politics, it's an incredible thing to do, it really is. But what I would say to you is, one, knowledge is power. So start reading everything, every newspaper, from right wing newspapers to left wing newspapers, everything on the internet. So much of it is free now, which didn't happen when I was growing up. You can get BBC online, all different kinds of magazines, articles, blogs. It's all there free. All you need is a phone with the internet to read it on the train as you're going home, if you're waiting for a doctor's surgery. Just read, learn, watch everything.
And would you say that people should select a niche at this stage or just be very generalist and read everything?
I think it's better just to read as much as you can and get a general overview, both domestic affairs and foreign affairs. But although I chose the political route because I was a mad political animal from a very young age, you don't have to do that. And so, you know, Parliament should be based on both. You need people with business skills like you, and you might want to do another degree and then go into politics. But it's important to study, important to also build that rhinoceros skin. So I was talking about sales earlier. And also, it's very important, sometimes it's really lacking in politics, is develop emotional intelligence. So learn how to read people, be good at human relations, be nice to people and kind to people, because people always remember that. They also remember if you're not, if you're abrupt, if you're pompous. Mm. I love this thing I once saw on a loo. It's nice to be important. It's very important. It's more important to be nice. I often say that to very young people when I go to schools. And, you know, but you've got to be committed to it because it's very hard. Very few MPs, 650, really hard to get selected. Join the party of your choice that you feel most aligned to. Get involved. There are jobs also available with MPs like me who do my parliamentary apprentice scheme. I had six apprentices. My latest apprentice just applied to me randomly. A very good guy. You can work with think tanks doing internships. You can work with public affairs jobs. I worked at Conservative Party HQ even before I went to university, just as an intern, because I wanted to get a flavour, and I was literally gluing newspapers on pieces of paper, photocopying them and handing them around to people. But it gives you a flavour of what goes on and gets you networking as well. Mm. You meet people that you would otherwise never have met.
And what about academics? Would you say that people need a degree to work in politics?
Although I did a degree, two degrees, absolutely not. It's a wonderful thing to do. University, I had the best time of my life. It was amazing. But if you love politics and want to study it for a few years, great thing to do, but you don't need it. It's not a prerequisite. I think Parliament needs a mixture of both. I think often Parliament benefits from people who've had business experience or practical experience and done other jobs who then get in, but you need the political nutters like me, because you also need people who've got a really good understanding of the mechanics of politics.
And because of your area of expertise, particularly on apprenticeships, it'd be great to sort of just get a couple of words from you about the pros and cons of university and apprenticeships. You know, both are viable options, as we know. What would you say?
So university is a life experience. You go there, you meet loads of friends that you might not otherwise do. You get holidays, but you get to study academically. And it is a great thing. I mean, it was the most wonderful years of my life. I'll never forget them. But doing an apprenticeship, I think, is really incredible, because you are working in a company or an organization, you are earning money. Although the apprentice wage for young people is something like £3.80, it's actually, most apprentices earn a lot more than that. They usually earn the minimum wage. You are earning while you learn. It's tougher in some ways, because you don't get you get formal holidays like every other employee, but not the term breaks you do at university. And you still have to do a bit of academic work, so 20% of your time is spent doing academic study. But at the end of it, if you're good, and 90% of apprenticeships get jobs at the end, you're made for life, because you're virtually guaranteed to get a job in the company you're doing your apprenticeship in, because they've trained you. You've been earning money all the time. You don't have to worry, as some students now are doing, when they leave university, they're not going to get a good graduate job. And you've got a chance to do even more apprenticeship. So you might start on level three, but you might go all the way up to do a higher level or degree apprenticeship. So it is an incredible thing to do. Mm. Incredible thing to do. But I really want to be clear, I'm not knocking universities. I said it was the best time I had. If you are more academic bent and you want to spend a little bit more time deciding what you do and have intellectual development, it's a great way to spend three years.
Mm. And I think where we are now in the UK, it's amazing that we've got two such viable routes. And in fact, you can cross between the two. That's not spoken about very often. But, you know, we have apprentices that go off to university subsequently. And we've also had graduates who've actually then gone into apprenticeships and done type of degree.
Well, you can even do degree apprenticeships now. There aren't enough of them. There are about something like 8,000 students, I think, doing. I want to have 50% of students doing degree apprenticeships. You go, you get that university experience, but you earn while you learn. And you're working in a company a lot of the time, but it's a very, very high level apprenticeship. That is an amazing thing to do. I think it would, and you have no loan. No loan, nothing to pay back. So if you've got a chance to do a degree apprenticeship, my advice to you is you get the best of both worlds, snap it up, because you'll be made for life.
Well, thank you, Rob, so much, not just for the interview, but for all of the work that you've done in an untiring way on apprenticeships and sort of providing so many more options for young people. It really has made a difference. I've seen that firsthand. And I love the interview, so thank you very much.
Thank you, and good luck to Middleton Murray.
Thank you. Hi there. If you enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, you can get more of the same, no matter where you are in your career. If you're looking for your first job, there's my book, How to Get Your First Job and Build the Career You Want, available on Amazon. Or if you prefer face-to-face, my company Middleton Murray provides courses to prep you for your new career and then place you into a job. Alternatively, if you prefer online, try my online program, Your Body Means Business, which is more holistic and provides a complete blueprint on how to advance your career, whether you're employed or running your own business, by upgrading your physical and mental fitness and following a complete business blueprint guaranteed for success. That program, I think, is my best yet. So in summary, no matter where you are in your career, starting out, starting again, or just wanting more, we can help. Follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, where I post daily at Angela Middleton. And subscribe to this channel, as well as my Limitless vlog on YouTube, where you'll see weekly vlogs full of hints and tips for enhanced careers performance. Oh, and share this with your friends as well if you think it will help them. Thanks so much for listening.